Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
All ministers and officials should now go to Case Orange. Repeat. This is an official colonial government broadcast.
Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Battlestar Galacticast, brought to you by Sci-Fi Wire. I am Mark Bernardin.
And I am Trisha Helfer.
Hey, Trisha.
Hello.
How are you?
I'm doing good.
Well, that's one of us.
Tough week.
It has been a week. A week and a month and a year. And we're just rolling right along.
We be rolling.
Just out of habit, almost. Like, I have no more will. It's just like... We have to keep doing this because it's what we do.
Yeah. I don't even have kids. And I go, how do people with kids do it? I can barely keep up with myself.
Vodka.
I had enough of that the last podcast.
We hope you guys enjoyed that last one we did. It was a roller coaster.
I think. It was maybe a little slurry.
It was a little slurry, a little silly. But I think, you know, it is the spirit of Battlestar a little bit.
You know, they drank ambrosia, right?
We will muddle through somehow.
And in Litmus, the one we're going to talk about tonight, they were trying to, the hangar deck guys were trying to make, was it?
Moonshine.
Socinus and Callie and...
The other dude?
Yeah. They were trying to make moonshine. So, you know, they were right along with us.
It's sometimes when under pressure, a safety valve can be the selective... Imbibition of alcohol.
Yes, and I'm going to blame Reka because she was a surprise guest.
She was.
She just showed up at my house.
She was a drop-in.
She was in town in Los Angeles, and she just called and said, I'm here. And I'm like, oh, okay, well, we're taping Battlestar Galactica. She's like, I'm coming over. And she was a welcome addition, but lent to the party atmosphere.
Yes, she laughed at all our dumb jokes, and we kept on sipping and slipping.
I'm going to blame her for keeping pouring.
Absolutely. As well we should. Reka. Bad Reka.
Bad Reka.
See you next time. So today we are going to talk about episode 106, Litmus, which was written by Jeff Vlaming and directed by Rod Hardy.
Oh, I love Rod.
Rod.
He's like Santa. He looks like Santa.
you and Reka, two sheets to the wind, were very... positive in your remembrances of Mr. Hardy.
I don't remember.
I think you said, best Santa ever.
Oh, lovely.
On set Santa.
Yes.
It's funny, like I tuning in on this episode, I had forgotten right until the beginning that we as the viewers didn't know that the presence of humanoid Cylons was still classified, right? Like I had just remembered that everybody knew because that's, you know, where the show goes. We're like, oh, no, everybody knows that there are 12 models and we've seen six and so forth and so on. But in this episode, it's sort of reaffirmed that nobody else knows that.
Like, yeah, sort of like because we as the viewers, well, and us as the cast, knew it. You kind of forget that it hadn't been broadcast out because it had been a few episodes ago that they really talked about it to some extent. Because there had been a lot of other stuff going on, the loss of water, the prison riot and Kara going missing and a few other things to kind of take your mind off of it.
The last time they spoke openly about it, I think, was the miniseries. And they decided to keep it to themselves because they don't want to panic on their hands. But the events of the teaser, especially of this episode, where we see Doral again for, I think, the third time in the miniseries, clearly.
Yes.
And then I think we see him once more like on a rooftop looking down at Boomer and Hilo.
Oh, the end of last episode. Last episode, yes, because there's six as well. That's when we're monitoring Sharon's... Mm-hmm. Sharon keeping an eye on Hilo.
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. So yeah, so we see him sort of walking through the Galactica, you know, or they hide him at first. Like, it's a lot of backs and it's a lot of, you know, cheated profiles and a lot of just boots walking. And
on then, third or fourth rewatch, you know, though. Yeah, you just like, know his head shape. You know who he is. Yeah.
He's that guy.
When he turns at right before he blows, the explosion happens. Mm-hmm. Man, he looks evil there.
He really does. Good casting.
Yes.
Well cast. He looks evil. And then we keep cutting away to Boomer and the Chief, boning in the bulkhead, in secret too. And cause their entire relationship is on the down low.
Right. Cause XO has already told them, knock it off.
Right. It's against regulations. You guys can't be doing this. You know, deck officers cannot have a romance.
We let it go while we knew it was going on when we thought Galactica was going to be decommissioned, right. But now we're at war.
Yes. Like, now this is a service fleet.
Knock it
vehicle.
Off.
And they've also had members of the crew covering, members of the deck crew cover for them. Like, you know, Callie's like, no, you guys are fine. We'll take care of you. And the other members of the gang are just like, no, it's okay. They were, he was in his bunk. She was doing this, whatever, mm-hmm. blah, 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 blah. And so it's kind of amazing that you get this amazingly tense sequence where, you know, Doral is walking through the Galactica and then finally Ty sees him. And then Adama sees him, and then he pivots and he turns, and then I got an explosive vest on. Ba-boom! Sound effects. This is a new sound effects podcast.
Yeah. Ba-boom. And the fireball goes all the way down the corridor.
Totally. And then once again, we're back in Doc Cottle's sick bay, and there's, you know, charred bodies, and we get an injury count. There's 3 dead, 13 injured. And it becomes clear that this secret can no longer be a secret, because if there are humanoid Cylons walking around the fleet, then they're going to need the people's help. Like, it's mm-hmm. it's like in those, you know, the detective shows or, you know, the cop movies or whatever, where they decide to turn to the people for help, right? It's like, listen, we've been investigating this ourselves, but now we put out a wanted poster, if we put out a you know, most wanted mm-hmm. sheet, if we put out a bolo, be on the lookout for, then we can use the resources of everybody. Everybody's eyes becomes part of our tools.
Well, even in our own, what's that slogan? If you see something, say something mm-hmm. in our own society now.
Totally.
That's, yeah. And it's a very fine line, right? Because you see the discussion between Rosalyn and Adama about it. And Adama's not convinced that this is the best thing. He's like, you know, you open up to the public, it opens up a can of worms.
Yeah.
So ultimately, I think, you know, they made the right choice by alerting the public so that you can have, if somebody sees a Doral. I mean, there's still enough people in the fleet that another Doral could be hiding out somewhere.
Right.
That the few that know don't see. But it certainly does open up a can of worms.
Yeah,
and you start blaming all your
Yeah, and Rosalyn even says, she says, you know,
independent tribunal, openness, transparency, it all sounds great. But after 20 years in political office, I'm telling you these things have a way of inflicting damage on the people you least expect. I do not want a witch hunt on our hands.
And she's very prophetic, because that is pretty much exactly what happens in this episode.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, Adama decides, all right, listen, we need to figure out what happened. We need an investigation. You can't just blow up, you know, you can't kill people on my ship and I don't know why and how. So he empowers the master at arms, Sergeant Hadrian, who was the keeper of that plastic explosive that Boomer found herself with mm-hmm. back in water, to open an investigation. And he gives her a free hand to follow her investigation wherever it leads.
Independent tribunal.
No oversight from the government or the military, which is super dangerous.
Yeah.
I mean, seems like a good idea. Again, lots of things in this episode seem like a good idea. Almost never are.
It's... Yeah. And you start to go, okay, but then how... So they're the... Sorry, I've got a cat. Caesar.
It's like a tiny lion.
If you hear that in the background, that's Caesar. He won't stop.
Kittens together strong. Caesar.
But how, you know, if it is, maybe I don't know enough about politics and the rule of law and everything, but... What if the person then running the independent tribunal is dirty?
Yeah.
And they have the ultimate say, or the judge in a, you know, that is coming down on, what is it called? The
verdict?
Not the verdict. Not the Supreme Court, but what if they make the wrong decision?
The jury?
No, when it comes down to the judge. Because watching the news the other day, and there was something like the judge, it was this morning. They're like, the judge made some really bad calls.
No, that guy,
and they're going to go to appeals. It's going to go to appeals.
Mm-hmm.
And they don't think it'll, you know, it'll be upheld. But
yeah, I mean, I think this is also one of those instances where we're beginning to see some of the things that do not exist in this colonial society, which is a judicial system.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like they have a jury that they seem to have plucked from other ships upon the fleet. They have this woman who's leading the investigation who we're never told is qualified to do this. Like, she's the master at arms, great, but is she a legal investigator? Does she have any experience? Does she understand?
And she could be a Cylon herself.
Totally. Or just
at this point, because we don't know.
Or like a psychopath.
Mm-hmm.
She could be a lot of different things, but she doesn't seem to be overly qualified to do this job.
You know, I never really saw anything in it. Well, I'm kind of jumping ahead, but where Adama at the end, like, pulls rank and says, no.
Right, we're done.
We're done. But he doesn't have the authority to do that.
No, no. Well, it's a great scene, and we'll get into it because it is, it does put you in this place. Fuck it, we'll jump ahead because it's our podcast. We can do whatever we want. You know, at the end of it, you know, Sergeant Hadrian brings Adama up and calls him to the stand and decides to interrogate him and begins to insinuate that he also was part of this conspiracy. And
by covering up the relationship, the affair between Tyrell and Boomer, even though all the signs are pointing to the fact, because when I was watching it, I'm like, but the Sergeant at Arms isn't really asking anything out of school.
No.
Because she's trying to find out who set the, you know, who allowed this to happen. And now that we know that Cylons look like humans, if these two people are having an affair and they're leaving hatch doors open, one of them could be a Cylon.
Right.
So if they're having an affair, we need to know. And then there's all these other people covering for Chief. And there was enough questions that I thought Adama was out of line there.
I mean, yeah, granted, he's also, he was the guy who decided to withhold that piece of information that Cylons look like humans.
Mm-hmm.
So there's that. There's covering up for the Chief and Boomer. There's, you know, allowing that relationship to keep going on. There's lots and lots of decisions that he's made, some of which are questionable. And he gets to that position and that point where we as the audience feel that we, because we want to be on his side. He's our hero, right?
So right.
We automatically side with him and feel like he's in the right to do it. But those other guys, those military guys in the background that he says, you know, take Sergeant Hadrian to her quarters, confine her until further notice, they got a judgment call because both of those people are right.
Mm-hmm.
He does not have the authority to do this. He does not have the authority to disband an independent tribunal. That's not given to him. She has the right to put him in prison. But he's like, you got to choose. You got to choose. You have to believe that I'm right, not that I'm doing the right thing.
Right.
You've lost your way, Sergeant. You've lost sight of the purpose of the law, to protect its citizens, not persecute them. Whatever we are, whatever's left of us, we're better than that. Now these proceedings are closed. You'll be transported back to your ships, and we appreciate your help. There's no
authority. Commander. This is an independent board. You have no authority to close our inquiry.
This is a witch hunt. They will not have it aboard my ship.
And the thing about that I mean, A, it's a great speech, and he's friggin' Eddie James almost, and so he just brings the hammer. But there is an episode of Star Trek The Next Generation called The Drumhead. And in it, there's an admiral who's called to investigate an explosion on board the Enterprise. Fancy that. And she suspects a Klingon exchange officer for doing it. And her investigation leads her to broaden her scope without any checks or balances until she turns on Captain Picard himself, who's instrumental in shutting down her investigation with a speech that goes something like,
"With the first link, the chain is forged. First speech censured, the first thought forbidden, the first freedom denied. Chains us all irrevocably." Those words were uttered by Judge Aaron Satie as wisdom and warning. The first time any man's freedom is trodden on, we're all damaged.
And, you know, not to say in any way that Ron Moore borrowed from that episode, but he was on Star Trek The Next Generation. Mm-hmm. Like, Jerry Taylor wrote that episode. He was the executive story editor for that season, the second season the fourth season of Next Generation. And you can feel the DNA of one show in informing the others. You know, the idea that Next Generation absolutely wrestled with heady issues like this. They wrestled with things like you know, transgendered aliens and the rights of man, and how do you decide what is alive and what isn't? How do you decide what is a slave race and isn't? How do you navigate these tricky moral questions? And Battlestar would sort of pick up that mantle in a way that science fiction wasn't in a real mm-hmm. way, and start to carry some of those threads. And so it does not surprise me that when we get to our first sort of courtroom episode, it shares some of that DNA with Next Generation.
Yeah, absolutely.
And I'm a nerd, which is why I know all that.
But you made a good point.
I made a good point. And I do think that it is, if anything, it's an homage. Mm-hmm. You know, if anything, it's a, you know, that was a great episode of Star Trek. I want to do my great legal episode of Battlestar. And the fact that it shows up this early in the run, again, and we talked about it before, that this show does so many really smart things so early on.
Right.
That it continually amazes me. And we start to get into the boomer and the chief of it all, right? Like, they chose, of course, wrongly, the perfect moment for a little rendezvous in the upper decks of Battlestar, the exact same moment that this bomb goes off. And, you know, they do have something to hide. Like, and so when Sergeant Hadrian begins questioning everybody, like, yeah, they are covering up for something. It's not what she thinks it is.
Yeah, but that's what struck me when I was watching it. I was like, all of you guys, why are you lying? I mean, I understand you wanting to cover for your chief, mm-hmm. but a bomb has just gone off. You've just been and killed people. You've just told people that, or you've just told the public that Cylons look like humans now. You're not, I'm not saying that you're guessing that Boomer's a Cylon or Chief's a Cylon, but they're having an affair. It's not the worst thing in the world. Totally. You know, they'll get reprimanded, but the other stakes are higher. And I couldn't understand why they all lied. And in front of, not even just when the Sergeant at Arms was going around asking questions, mm-hmm. but when they were actually called in front of the tribunal, they all still lied.
Yeah.
You guys, like, you're supposed to be telling the truth now. You guys are supposed to be a moral compass here.
Yeah. I mean, there's that great part at the end. Again, we're going to bounce around a little bit. But where Chief Tyrrell, after Cecinus is sort of sentenced, ultimately, and found guilty of being a conspirator, you know, he goes to Adama and says, this isn't right. This is wrong. You gotta do something. You got to fix this.
Oh, I loved what Eddie said there.
Eddie lays into him. He just, you know, what I can't do.
So I can't let someone that wears this uniform get on a witness stand and lie under oath. And that's what your man did. He either lied the first time or he lied the second time. And it doesn't matter. He's guilty and he'll pay the price. You'll pay a different price. You'll have to walk out on that hangar deck every day knowing that one of your men is in the brig because you couldn't keep your fly zipped. You're the most experienced non-commissioned officer we have left. You keep my planes flying. I need my planes to fly. Dismissed.
And you also lied on the tribunal as well.
Yes, look, but I need
But he doesn't
you.
But I need you. You're the only one at this point that can keep my planes flying, and I need my planes flying.
Yeah.
And it's like, oh.
It's compromised authority. It's, you know, I I've also done the wrong thing by allowing this you know, romance to continue to flourish. I think I've done the wrong thing by not telling the fleet that they were humanoid Cylons. But your man definitely did the wrong thing, and somebody's got to go down for this. And then Rossen calls it at the top. Mm-hmm. She says, you're going to have to give them a name. If you start a tribunal, they will need a name, and you have to give them somebody. And that somebody will eat at Tyrrell for the rest of his days.
For the rest.
Of his days.
Yes.
Yee! Okay, but yeah, we skipped all over the place. We did a whole, like, it's like a hopscotch episode. We're just kind of following where we, like, I don't think we would talk about that now.
It's better than the drunk episode, so. Right. There was no rhyme or reason to that. No, I don't
we are now just aimless because, for no good reason, at least there we were hammered. okay, all right. And here's the other weird, funny, wonderful thing. Is that, you know, Hadrian's investigation is leading her, clearly she's beginning to sense that the chief has something to do with what's going on. And she suspects that that he might have been an unwitting or willing agent for a Cylon. And he lies. He pleads whatever the colonial version of the Fifth Amendment is. It's the 23rd article of colonization, I think.
Yes.
Which I'm sure is also, you know, you cannot give any incriminating evidence against yourself. He does all of this because he won't give up Boomer. He won't give up the woman that he loves, who ironically is a Cylon.
Yes.
And was in possession of explosives from that very same locker that Sergeant Hadrian is attempting to secure.
Mm-hmm.
Poor guy.
Anne was there. She left the hangar open.
Totally.
After their rendezvous.
She is guilty of all of the things that people are concerned about.
Yeah, Grace here was, when I was watching her, when we're bouncing forward, when Tyrell says we're done, she actually looked guilty. She looked kind of pissed off to me.
It's funny because...
Like, not in a, you just breaking up with me way, but you mother fracker. Like, you're not going along with my plan. I thought that was a little foreboding there.
Yeah, and I think it's also telling that the thing that makes her tear up is not that he breaks up with her. It's that he asks her, did you leave the hatch open?
Mm-hmm.
Like, that is her sort of emotional prod. That is, wait, you think I might be a Cylon? You think I might be helping them? Not, you don't want to have sex with me anymore in hidden places in the Battlestar Galactica?
Yeah.
You don't have time for me? You don't want to make time with me anymore, Chief Tyrell? I'm the greatest good you ever going to get.
But ask me a question and I won't answer it. Yeah. You know, I'm going to, yeah.
Totally.
But all the while this is all going on in Galactica, we're on Caprica with Sharon and Hilo.
Yes.
And Sharon's gone missing in the attack on their safe house.
Right.
And
which always was like, I mean, we even talked about it last time. It's like, we know that Sharon's up to a little bit of no good.
Absolutely.
And so like when she's not there, when she just disappears, you're like, wait, I know this isn't like a Jeopardy thing. We're not concerned for Sharon.
Mm-mm.
No, we're still concerned for Hilo.
And then you see she's all in on it.
She's all in on it.
Yeah.
I will tell you the part of that scene that was the most impressive is that you beat the shit out of Grace.
I did. I was rewatching that going, that was fun.
I was like, man, Trisha can throw a punch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that was my first, because we hadn't gotten to the end yet where I had the big stunt fight with Katie. And so that was, I mean, she wasn't hitting back because it had, you know, we had to look like she was beaten up. But Six enjoyed it.
I mean, like, and I've seen my fair share of television and film fights. And, you know, you can always kind of tell when the person's like, I've never been in a fight. I've never thrown a punch. I'm not sure how this all works. I was like, I think Trisha's beat somebody up before. This does not feel like it is just, so tell me, how do I, what part should I? It's like, no, I'm going to throw this hip right here. I'm going to lean into it.
No, I don't think I've actually ever been in a real fist fight, but I do sure enjoy doing the stunt fights.
I sure do enjoy beating people up.
It is a lot of fun.
No barroom brawling?
The most is I slapped a boy once. I think when I was like 8.
There was going to be like, when I was like 32. Did you have to train for that? Did they put you guys through like fight school?
Not for that, no.
Not for that?
That was just pure instinct. Pure talent, Mark.
This is what I bring to the
That's
table.
Just me being, you know,
raw
badass.
Raw power.
Yes. No, I mean, I think that was probably the first time that I talked with the stunt coordinator a little bit about, you know, this was my first series, so I had this would have been my first kind of stunts. Right. And about, you know, you have to obviously, when, you know, the fight I did later with Katie, that one I trained for at the end of the season. But this one, it was just you want to make sure that you have your parameters, if that's the right word, where you know, it's easy to aim to punch someone, but it's harder to sell a punch and not actually hit them, you know. But and because of different camera angles too, it depends on how close you can get. If you maybe have to, you know, move your arm in a different way, if you have to kind of come in from a different angle, it all depends on the camera angles.
Right.
That's going to sell the punch properly. And so that was probably, I would have worked with the coordinator at that point to just do a little, you know, maybe half an hour before we shot type thing, or maybe the day before, I can't remember. Gotcha. Maybe the day before got together for a little bit. And you know what? Thinking back, I think Grace and I did get together with the coordinator and just kind of
work through it a little bit,
go through a few things and have a few ideas of punches that you're going to do. And so that you have to, cause she knows how to react as well. And, cause you don't want to just go, unless you're really experienced at it, you can't just go, okay, let's just go out and pretend to beat each other up, because you have to know who's coming in at what angle, and then they're going to react that way and so forth. And, so, you know, thinking back, I probably would have worked with the coordinator a little bit, but not trained.
Right.
I mean, to me, training is like training.
Yeah. I've never been in an on-screen fight.
No?
No. I've never worked with a stunt coordinator.
You know how I... you want to try?
Trisha's going to beat me up now. Let me show you how it's done.
The first thing that they would have had me do probably is practice at home. Mm-hmm. And you look like if you have a shower rod, mm-hmm. as opposed to a glass shower door or something, you loop a towel over it.
Okay.
And you practice punching the towel so that you know how close you're getting to it without, you know, so if you actually hit it, you're not going to hurt yourself.
But, okay. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've never had to fake fight. I've had to real fight, but never had to fake fight.
We may have to for a special episode. Like, do a little stunt training there, Mark. Yeah. I can teach you. I taught my little nephew once.
Yeah.
For one little digression. It was one family get together or whatever, my husband's family. And they all said, let's do little Vimeo or whatever those little
clippy clips, like vines or whatever.
Yeah, vines. Yeah, they were vines. And they paired each adult up with a kid. And I got this like little 8-year-old or something. And I taught him a little bit of how to stunt fight, how to take the punch. Mm-hmm. And he comes up to me. I'll show it to you at some point. He comes up to me and he goes, something about you look old. And I go, oh! And I punch him right across the face, give him a right hook right across the face. And he sells the punch and he falls up against the wall and he falls down. And we get the little beep, beep, like the bird chirping things. We won.
Nice. And child services showed up. Okay. We're gonna take a quick break for a word from some sponsors and friends. And when we come back, I will tell you about my non-on-screen fighting experience.
You can host the best backyard barbecue when you find a professional on Angie to make your backyard the best around. Connect with skilled professionals to get all your home projects done well. Inside to outside, repairs to renovations. Get started on the Angie app or visit Angie.com today. You can do this when you Angie that.
And we are back from the break.
Yeah. So I have been beaten up a fair number of times.
Really?
I have never been like the champion of a fight. It is one of those like, I got bullied when I was like 11 years old, and that wasn't fun. And then I started lifting weights, and then like people didn't pick on me because I lifted a lot of weights, and that sold it for a good long while. And then I was in college, I think. I was driving with a bunch of friends. We had skipped out of class early, as you do, and we were going to go see Star Trek VI, The Undiscovered Country, in the theaters. I went to school in Queens, New York. We were driving into Manhattan. The movie started in 15 minutes. It's a half an hour drive, so I was driving pretty fast. I cut off like everybody on the Long Island Expressway, including like this one car full of dudes who were not happy that I cut them off, who claimed to have like hit somebody else as a result. So I'm still driving and they follow me, right? So I'm driving my little Volkswagen GTI and I got a couple friends in the car, and then this van pulls up behind us and they're like honking horns, and they pull up, and then it gets like, they hop out of the car and start opposing, like, we're gonna kick your ass. It's like, fuck you, man. And like I hit one dude like kind of really hard. And then I realized that my other two friends did not get out of the car. So it was like me and like four against four dudes. And so I decided I'm never going to win this fight. So better to like let them think they're winning this fight and then get tired of beating on me for a while. So it was just like, you know, punch, punch, and then like fetal position covering things. And they're like, kick, kick, punch, punch. Oh, man, we kicked that guy's ass. You're right. Let's go to Red Lobster. And they left. And so I got back in my car and with my two friends who did not help me at all. And we didn't speak until we got to the theater and went to go see Star Trek, because I wasn't not going to see Star Trek. But yeah, that is almost the extent of my physical altercations in the real world with strangers. I've punched friends before, but that's something else. I've meant it too.
I've punched for fun in various circumstances.
Who doesn't?
And situations.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Yeah, that was like the extent of my like in the real world. Oh shit, it's gonna get weird.
Fetal position,
in which I cannot.
Probably the smart choice.
You know, that's where I was going. I'm like, I could probably beat up like two of these guys, but there's four.
Yeah.
And so it's going to get bad. And the angrier I make them, the worse it's going to get. So.
Yes.
That's right, buddy. Just protect the giblets and everything will be fine. And everything was. And I still went to the movies. Yay.
And you still have your pretty face.
And I still have my pretty face. Well, you know, other things happened to that face later on. Acid burns and knife gouges.
That's for another.
No, we're going to save that stuff. We got plenty of time. We got 75 more episodes of this show to get to the crazy knife fighting.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have a question for you.
Yes.
I was thinking about this while watching this episode, which is why I'm bringing it up. I wonder if the Cylons knew just how powerful a tool paranoia would be when they decided to make themselves human looking. Like, was that, do you think, because, and Six has theorized it, the humanity's children are fashioning themselves in their creator's image, right? Seeking to replace them in the cosmos. Or is it psychological warfare? Is it knowing that if we look like them, they won't trust each other? And if they don't trust each other, they will do most of our work for us.
If you rot from within, that's one of the most damaging.
It is. The poison seed.
I mean, haven't we just seen that within our own election in the last round? Whichever side of the spectrum you're on. Yeah. Like,
none of it's good.
None of it's good. You start infighting and divisiveness or divisiveness, mm-hmm. or however you say it. And you start questioning the neighbor.
Mm-hmm.
You start losing very quickly, I think.
Yeah. And so I began to wonder, which were they that brilliant? Did the Cylons look far enough down the road? Because first plan was clearly just kill everybody. Like we're launching a Holocaust. We're launching a genocide. And if we got everybody, we'd be happy. But we probably won't get everybody. So here's what plan B is. Plan B is throughout whatever's left, throughout the society as it exists, 10 years ago, we're going to plant a shit ton of human-looking Cylons. And then when it all goes bad, and if the plan doesn't quite work, plan B is they will ruin it from the inside.
Yeah, so were they that forward thinking, or was it more just, it'll help us infiltrate?
Right.
And, oh, guess what?
Bonus.
Bonus. We scored.
I know. Like, look what we did, you guys. We totally, like, past us was super smart because future us loves this.
And now they start fighting because they want credit for it.
Whose idea was this anyway? Well, I'm pretty sure it was Six's idea.
Yeah, I agree.
Because Six is brilliant.
Yes. Although, we're talking about Six for a little bit here. Mm-hmm. I did notice, because Starbuck informs Baltar, mm-hmm. that, and you can see Baltar had no idea of this. Yep. He hadn't thought of it. That the bomber was headed toward, the bomber was on C-Deck, mm-hmm. which is where he is supposedly working on his Cylon detector.
Yep.
And Starbuck says to him, Baltar comes in to see her in infirmary, I think. She's mm-hmm. still in the infirmary. And brings her a cigar and comes in to flirt, probably.
Yep.
And Starbuck says, you work on C-Deck, right? Well, don't you think the bomber was just coming to blow up you and the Cylon detector? Or your super secret project? And you see Baltar freak out.
Yeah.
And Six, you know, basically affirming that... Mm-hmm. That, but then when he says, I'm going to bomb it myself.
Yeah, blow it up.
I'll blow it up. Cause his self-preservation comes into, the forefront
job
again.
One. Job one is number one.
Preserve myself. And I'm going to blow it up. And that's when we see Six get mad again.
It's awesome.
I don't know if we've really seen her. Maybe I'm not remembering, but really get mad at Baltar and like start being physical with him.
Yeah, which is great. And she's the Hulk. But she's like, don't make me angry.
I like love that line.
I was like, oh, that's perfect.
I forgot it was in this one and I was watching it. I was like, oh, it's coming up.
Oh, here we go.
Don't make me. What did I say? I have to see if I can do it again. Hey,
don't make me angry, guys. You wouldn't
like,
you wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Don't make me angry, guys. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is total.
And then I kiss him.
And then you kiss, because that's how that goes. That's never the way it worked in The Hulk when I watched it as a kid. When David Banner would go from town to town and always warn somebody, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry. That was his like catchphrase. He never kissed anybody after doing that. It would have been a way different show. Listen, Sheriff, don't make me angry. You wouldn't like me when I'm angry.
Listen, that wasn't really a kiss sound. I just sort of devoured the mic.
That was a slurp.
That was a slurp. I got turned into an alien. I'm going to suck up his brains.
That was a succubus right there. I'm ducking your soul. I swallow your soul. Yeah. So, and Roslyn, by the end of it, she has to announce Cincinnati's name in public. She has to give him up. She has to, again, feed the public beast. The public demands to know answers. And she sets it up right up front. It's like somebody on your crew messed up because nobody just walks into the Galactica and blows up a plastic explosive bomb, kills a bunch of people, and nobody screwed up. Somebody was at fault, and one of your guys was at fault.
Especially with the new information as well. Everything's heightened to such a degree. It's not just, somebody blew it up.
It's mob rule.
Mob rule. Because there wasn't that much with water.
No.
When the water tanks blew up, they never found out who did it, right?
No, I don't think so. I don't even know what the story that they told the fleet was, but it could well have just been an accident. You know, an accident, took place on the Galactica and it blew up. Explosion sent, 90% of our water reserves into this deep of space.
There happened to be explosives missing, but the public didn't necessarily know that.
I would bet dollars to donuts they never told the public about that.
But there's becoming too many of them, and I think that's part of Rosalind's point, right? There's too many instances happening now that the public is going to start to question.
Right.
And we have to give them an answer, and we have to give them a name.
Yeah.
And sort of remind me of like a public hanging back in the day, right? Why that just popped into my head. But no, like back in like, Game of Thrones time.
Ye old Western days? Or even like, kangaroo courts in military trials where it's like, listen, somebody did something wrong. We have to appease either the people or the military or some treaty that needs to be upholded or whatever it is. But somebody's got to swing for this. Mm-hmm. I don't care who. Mm-hmm. Find me a name. Rosalind isn't quite that mercenary about it, but she knows right at the jump when she tells Adamus, like the minute you start tribunals, the minute you start telling the public, the minute you start being candid, they're going to want something. They're going to want to know that we're doing our jobs. And the only way for them to know that is if you give them somebody. And so that's at the end when he tells, Chief, like, listen, man, your man dug himself in this hole and you helped him. And there's no digging him out because the public needs a name. And he's guilty.
And you're more important at this point
totally.
To the fleet in as a whole.
Right. Is he guilty of this? Probably not. Is he guilty of something? Absolutely. And that's good enough for me.
Do we ever see Cicinus again?
I don't remember.
I'm not remembering. He has the longest eyelashes. I was watching that going, I want those eyelashes. Why do they always go to boys?
Oh, damn. Would you look at those eyelashes?
I couldn't stop looking at them. Okay, audience, when you look at, if you're following along and you see that,
it's like,
he has uncanny long eyelashes.
Your eyelashes are they're fanning me from the other side of the room. Gentleman caller, your very impressive lashes.
Are those suckers fake?
Did you get those down on 45th Street? Because those are impressive lashes. Is your name Tangerine Dynamite by night? Do you host a podcast about RuPaul's Drag Race? You are very extra. You are not low maintenance at all.
No.
Tangerine Dynamite.
You do kind of, when you put false eyelashes on the strips for like a red carpet or for a photo shoot or set, if you have to put them on for the character, it is kind of depressing when you take them off. Like, oh, that's what I'm left with. I'm more comfortable, but damn.
This is just my face now. I couldn't. We have the episode on the background, as we often do. It's at some point, maybe we will auction a for charity. We'll auction like you get to sit and watch us record an episode.
Yeah.
So you can see how we do this, because it's ridiculous. But I was just watching that there was a scene, the guy is Baltar and Starbucks scene where he visits her in the sick bay and he hands her a cigar. And the cigar is basically like a giant phallic symbol. Like it's this shiny metal case, this tube. It's like, why? Come on, man. Just hand her the cigar because now.
Big metal dildo, is that what you're saying?
It is some kind of rod. Some kind of rod.
Yeah.
You know, I am all but out of things to talk about with this episode. I will say
that we kind of bounced around.
We bounced around. There was no real narrative. There's no real thing. I did find it. I found it romantic. The scene where Hilo and the three Cylons are standing above, like in their perch, in their airy, watching Hilo decide what he's going to do.
And he changes direction.
Yeah, when they say, listen, if he goes north, he's going after Sharon. He's going to go rescue her from wherever she is. And if he goes south, he's heading, you know, to a ship, possibly back home.
But it's going to be toward nightfall, regardless.
Either way. And if he goes south, we kill him. Mm-hmm. And if he goes north, then we let him go, and he's in love. And they watch, and he starts to go south, and he stops, and like...
And I think Six and Durrell make fun of Sharon.
They do.
He just didn't love you, and I guess you overestimated your ability.
You don't got game, sister.
No. And then Hilo turns around.
He turns, and he walks north towards true love.
And then he turns back again a little bit. He has a couple of moments back and forth, a little indecisive.
Looks over his shoulder, a little blue steel.
See, maybe. I read into a little blue steel. Tomo is so good at blue steel.
Oh, he's nothing but like clenched jaw.
Nothing. And I think I do say in that, well, he is handsome. Mm. But when I was watching that, to me, I didn't see the love as much. I mean, the love was apparent.
Right.
But I also saw when he was doing his little back and forth, I was registering, she came back to save me.
Right.
How can I not, I'm a coward if now I make the easy choice to save myself and not turn around for her. And when he does find her all beaten up, and then a totally nice setup by the Cylons, by the way.
Oh, they know.
With the sack over her head and everything, like to play with his. But he does say that. He's like, we're even now.
Yeah. Yeah. It might not have been love, but it was definitely like duty and obligation.
Although he did kiss her right off the bat.
I mean,
he kissed. I mean, she was all bloody and he, to kind of calm her down, he kissed her.
He is super smitten.
Yes, he's super smitten.
Which is his superhero name. Captain Smitten. Oh, I love you, Sharon. You've been be my Sharon tonight.
Captain Smitten Agathon.
Smitten Agathon.
Smitten Agathon.
That is the name of my Jaeger name is Smitten Agathon. My giant robot that I used to fight giant monsters.
Smitten Agathon.
Strike of Eureka.
And
Smitten Agathon.
And Tyrell will be not so smitten Tyrell.
Yeah, not so Galen smitten Tyrell.
That's the name of this episode. We've renamed it.
We have. Not so Galen smitten Tyrell. Comma Agathon Esquire Jr.
We should rename every episode.
We really should. Like W. He's like, oh, your name's now Sparky. And, you're Whiskers. You're Wrinkle Pants. You're a Galen not so Tyrell smitten Tyrell. Agathon Esquire Jr.
Gosh.
Man, this water. It's really good tonight.
I've got a La Croix.
You do. Top shelf. Tangerine.
Tangerine La Croix. It's not as I'd say it's as tasty as my vodka last week, but I'm a lot more.
This episode is brought to you by non-alcoholic beverages and exhaustion.
Leading into the holidays.
Pretty much.
Yes.
You know, by the time you people hear this, it will be way past the holidays.
Mm-hmm.
But do you have any plans for Christmas, Tricia?
I am going to stay in Los Angeles.
Staycation.
By myself.
What?
Yeah, it's going to be a very chill holidays for me this year.
Good for you.
So I've got an old kitty. Not Caesar. I mean, he's getting pretty old too, but Bella's really getting up there. So I'm going to stay around and cuddle the kitties and
play in the snow, frolic.
Yeah. Frolic in my sauna, maybe pretend it's cold outside. It is kind of chilly.
It's a little chilly. It is as cold as LA gets. I can see my breath.
Yes. I've heated my pool.
See, look at you.
I've had to heat the pool. So, I mean, it's winter for LA.
I know. There are people, I'm sure, in like, you know.
Frack you.
Northern North
right
Dakota.
Right now, swearing at us. Like,
what? She's heating her pool. I had to thaw my car out.
Hey, I was just in Alberta not too long ago. I went up a couple of weeks ago to Alberta, and it was snowy.
It was snowy? Good.
So, yeah, I decided to stay here. And you?
I am returning to the land from whence I came, New York.
Mm. Don't get in any fights on your way to see Star Trek or any other movie. Star Trek. It was car. You got in fight by a vehicle. No. You know, it was.
I'm on this road with you, Trisha.
Yeah.
I got how you got there. I will endeavor not to get in any fights. I make no promises, though, because I'm a cowboy on a steel horse I ride, and I'm wanted.
Dead or alive. And if not, that is the end of our litmus Battlestar Galactic cast.
We're going to now end every episode with a shitty Bon Jovi quote. It's not that shitty. It's a great song.
No, it's a great song.
Richie Sambora, you kill it, buddy.
Oh, yeah.
Wanted. Dead or alive.
Wanted.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Now we're going to cut an album.
Yeah.
The Battlestar Galactica cast presents like 9 seconds of Bon Jovi songs by Trisha Mark.
Katie might have to come back. Katie can sing. Alessandro Giuliani is an amazing singer.
I mean, he'd better be a fucking soprano with that.
Do you remember when he sings?
Oh, that's right.
In the fourth season?
Yeah. It's like, where did that come from?
That's him. Yeah. So... Yeah. It's really him, not faking.
Okay. We'll have to ask him if he's a castrati.
Yes. I don't know what that means.
Twitter, I think, will tell us what that
means. Yes, they will.
Yeah. Castrati were, as the name might imply, in sort of Renaissance Italy.
Castrated?
Yes. They would snip children when they were...
Oh, yeah. So they could keep their high voice.
So they keep their high voices. So it's just... He sings like an angel. He'll never make any more. No, he can hit the high C like a bouncy C. Not that much bounce, buddy. Unhappy.
So that's not a eunuch then?
No.
Well, a eunuch is everything's cut off, right?
They take the whole meat and two veg. Because it's about like it's both punishment and I think like eunuchs were traditionally, if I remember my shitty history correctly, in charge of keeping the harems.
Right.
And so you wanted to make sure there was no temptation. But castrati's, you know, were also Lotharios. Like, they just went for it. They just had these beautiful voices. And they were hairless, like dolphins. And they were beautiful.
Oh.
They had gorgeous eyelashes.
Now the actor doing Sinus is going to be really mad at us.
Damn.
We're not saying that about you.
Nah,
you,
man,
just,
I,
you just got
You have everything
awesome.
You're supposed to have. And so do you, Alessandro.
Yes.
We are not besmirching anybody's manhood.
No.
Real or implied. We should absolutely end this episode now.
Yes. We went way past the dead or alive. We're now... Dead, not alive.
Yes. You know, if there were rails, we swerved off them a long while ago.
Did we jump the shark?
No.
Is that
not
a tech?
Yet.
Is that?
No, we haven't jumped the shark yet. I mean, but the shark is ahead. It's within sight. We can either stop now or we have to jump it.
Yes. Well, next episode is 6 degrees of separation.
Yeah, it is. I can't wait to talk to Will Smith about that.
Will Smith?
Yeah. He was in the movie 6 degrees of separation.
Oh, God. I'm like, Will Smith wasn't in Battlestar.
Like, I would have remembered that. That would have been a day.
I mean, what? Huh? A little slow on the uptake.
No, it's all right.
He was. I saw that.
We are powering through.
Yes. Okay. Well, yes. Thank you for joining us for Battlestar Galactica again.
Yes, and thank you to Alex Sarchet, who is our master on the ones and twos. Thank you to Bear McCreary for gifting us with an amazing theme song. Thank you to Sci-Fi Wire for making all of this possible. And thank you to Tricia Helfer for, letting me ride shotgun.
Aww. I'll just and leave the thank yous at that.
Yes, Trish is letting me ride bitch on this particular on this ride
on my hog.
Sunset. Yep. Where are we going now, Trisha?
On that note, see you next week, folks.
Adios.